Fan God's Gift into Flame. Theological Rationale for Developing an Annual Spiritual and Professional Growth Plan. Thinking Theologically About the Blessings of Planning for Growth. Part 2. Pondering Some Blessings That Empower Faith-Filled Planning. Blessing number 2. Planning for growth honors God by taking seriously that gifts were given to bring Him honor and glory to His saving name as we use those gifts in our callings. When it comes to this blessing of planning, the objection that at times gets in the way sounds like this. Couldn't such planning for growth be a launching pad for the kind of self-centered self-promotion that is behind the competitive who's number one spirit so evident in the world? Again, the simple answer is yes. Even a cursory glance through the Gospels finds the apostles regularly returning to their favorite topic for debate. Which one of them was the greatest? It doesn't take much to spot that same spirit at work, as John reported that they had to put a stop to unauthorized driving out of demons by the man who was not one of us. Mark 9, verse 38. How stunned John must have been when, expecting commendation for protecting the exclusive rights of the 12, Jesus rebuked him in his ignorance and proceeded to warn all of them about the danger of causing offense. We expect such a spirit of competition in the unbelieving world. Unable to find their identity solely in being loved and redeemed children of God through Jesus, the world is forever seeking to establish its identity by excelling others in outward success, wealth, and achievements. They are looking for that which sets them apart from others around them, and on which they can take pride. Because our own sinful nature refuses to take comfort in our identity in Jesus, we too can easily import this spirit of proud competition into the church. Public ministers are by no means immune to the "my ministry faithfulness trumps yours" type of argument. This can lead us to adopt a subtle theology of glory that refuses to talk about our weaknesses and that only wants others to see our strengths. We can begin to forget Paul's maxim that it is when we are weak that we are strong. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 10. Our sinful nature can run wild in planning if the focus seems to be, look at me, look how gifted I am, look at what I have achieved. Clearly, my church should be happy to have me. How sobering, then, to remember that the rich young ruler, so capable and apparently having it all together, how many Jewish mothers hoped he would be their daughter's husband, was in reality not even within the kingdom at all. Mark 10, verse 17. But even though making plans for growth can indeed become a platform for sinful pride, it is also true that this real danger can be distorted into a pious-sounding smokescreen to conceal less-than-sanctified reasons for avoiding all planning for growth. First, we can make fine-sounding arguments that we are not planning because we don't want to follow a personal theology of glory. Yet it is entirely possible that our sinful nature could be hiding its own laziness behind that smokescreen. Our sinful nature may be very comfortable with the status quo and doesn't want to go through the pain that comes from learning and growing beyond ingrained habits and mindless routine. It can be very ego-deflating to admit that there may be better ways to carry out our God-given callings rather than following the comfortable ruts we have established. Where our own natural heart's laziness is behind our failure to plan, then we are in danger of becoming like those about whom Luther warns in his preface to the Large Catechism. Quote, "Everything that they, many preachers and pastors, are to preach and teach is now so very clearly and easily presented in so many salutary books, which truly deliver what the other manuals promised in their titles, sermons that preach themselves, sleep soundly, be prepared, and thesaurus. Yet they are not upright and honest enough to buy such books, or if they have them already, to consult or read them. Oh, these shameful gluttons and servants of their bellies are better suited to be swineherds and keepers of dogs than guardians of souls and pastors." End quote. Preface to the Large Catechism, Kolb Wengert, 379. Secondly, it is not just laziness that can hide behind our failure to plan. At times, the enemy may be deep discouragement in life and ministry. Having banged our heads against the challenges of our callings for so long, we can begin to conclude in our heart of hearts that nothing will ever change anyway. Once again, we may even distort the theology of the cross to assure us that such pessimistic discouragement is part of our theology. But allowing such discouragement to grab hold of us is in direct contradiction to Paul's words to every Christian at the end of his great resurrection chapter. Quote, "Therefore, my dear brothers, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain." End quote. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 58. While it is certainly a lie of the devil that we can, by some extraordinary effort, bring the kingdom of heaven visibly to earth, it is an equally deceitful lie of the devil that all efforts at growth and change in the kingdom are nothing but love's labor lost. Thirdly, what can also hide behind our reticence to plan for growth is a self-centered fear of looking bad in front of others. Why stretch for growth when we may only fall and put our weaknesses on display for all to see? Two errors are being made then simultaneously. First, as we defensively seek to keep our weaknesses hidden away, we fail to realize how much others are able to see through such flimsy facades. Secondly, why would those whose hope is in the grace of God be so afraid of failure or admitting weakness? The blood of Christ covers every weakness that may be revealed and puts God's seal of blessing on even that which we might label as failure. Finally, lurking behind a failure to plan for the sake of avoiding self-aggrandizing pride may actually be evidence that we are working with a distorted definition of humility. Humility does not mean denying that we have all been given a unique package of gifts to put to use wisely and well in our God-given callings. True humility thankfully acknowledges the gracious reality that, quote, "to each one the manifestation of the Spirit is given for the common good," end quote. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 7. Humility is not a denial that gifts have been received. Humility rather remembers that they are all gifts of grace. Quote, "For who makes you different from anyone else? What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did not receive it, why do you boast as though you did not?" End quote. 1 Corinthians 4, verse 7. So what is the key to walking the tightrope? How do we avoid pride that plans for the sake of personal recognition while at the same time rejecting the laziness of discouragement or defensiveness or false humility that does not even bother to plan? Isn't it remembering that the whole purpose for growth is not about us? Quote, "Each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others, faithfully administering God's grace in its various forms. If anyone speaks, he should do it as one speaking the very words of God. If anyone serves, he should do it with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. Amen." End quote. 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 10 and 11. Just as Luther repeatedly reminded us that our good works are not for our benefit, as if we had something to prove to God to gain his love, but for our neighbor's benefit, so too developing the use of our gifts more and more year after year is not about finding our way onto the top 10 most effective Wells pastors list. How foolish that would be. We all already possess before our Father the record of the most faithful shepherd of souls. We were clothed with that already in our baptism. Instead of being about us, growth is about excelling more and more in serving that gracious Christ and those he has entrusted or still may entrust to our care. It is about the cause of the gospel. It is about being sharpened tools of God's compassion in all our callings so that he may be praised through Jesus Christ. God doesn't ask us to prove anything to him by our growth, but he does position us in our unique callings so as to be proofs of the wonder of his grace in our royal priestly and public ministry service. Planning to use our gifts takes seriously that gifts were given to us to bring honor to his saving name. To plan for growth with such a Christ-centered focus is to act in faith that God does wish to bless His world, and in particular, His church, through the gifts He has given us.